Hey, Roy, thanks much.
You bet, not a problem.
We didn't really get to take up corn or soybeans. What are your opinions on those?
Well, I think that the demand for corn is just going to be phenomenal. The government has right now, the USDA has 415 wheat feeding plugged in that has to come out of the S&Ds. And I think your domestic corn demand is going to go up by that, by at least 200 million. And I think that there's a potential problem in our DDG feeding. If you take aflatoxin into an ethanol plant and it's five parts, it comes out in the DDG as 15 parts. It triples. And I see a lot of feed mills that have been using DDGs that are already starting to make plans to reduce that in their feed mix. That means more domestic corn feeding. And our exports are going to be phenomenal. We've hurt the ability of the rest of the world to feed wheat. And you're talking about feeding about 104, 105 million tons of wheat normally. And I just don't think it's going to be there, not with these $10 prices.
So let's see. Let me see if I've got this right. So what you're thinking here is that, of course, that wheat prices are high enough that only human consumption will take place out of that.
Or reduced animal feeding.
Yeah, reduced animal feeding, and we'll switch that over to corn, correct?
Corn and barley and sorghum.
Yeah, and I have a question on the wheat side and the human consumption. Because this is a staple crop, on human consumption, you're really not going to... You can't switch that out with something else, right, with another crop?
I would think that it's very difficult to replace it with anything else. In Egypt, they do mix their wheat with some corn flour for some of the subsidized bread that they sell. But it is very difficult to replace it with anything else in most parts of the world.
Well, and then I have a follow-up question. If it's for human consumption, and this is a staple, and I understand that we would throw the feed wheat off that tends to get exported around the market where countries can purchase it. But with human consumption, other than maybe India, and I'm not even so certain about them, and Europe, who else can afford to import wheat at these types of prices for their human consumption needs?
Well, that's a really good question, because I think the people that you're talking about are parts of the world where they spend 30 or 40 or 35% of their disposable income for food.
Yeah, correct.
And when you take prices up this sharply, it's really tough.
Well, and I guess the question is, how quickly will we get to the point, have we gotten to the point where we're done rationing, or we're ready to ration that out, or we're finished off at this point?
Well, I don't know. I'm really impressed with the pace of our sales to date.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Indian tender, and the results will be Monday before we open on Monday night. And if they buy wheat at $10 plus delivered to India, it'll tell you that they really need it. India has a domestic support program that uses about 15 million tons of wheat a year, and they usually buy it in their own domestic markets. They have a subsidy program much like our loan program, where the farmer sells it to the government rather than going into the mills.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had a real tough time buying that wheat for the last 2 years because of a speculative fervor in the world wheat market. And they bought 9 million tons last year in the domestic markets and had to import 6. This year, they have bought 11 million tons, leaving them about 4 million tons short. They've bought 5-11 so far. So I think they need to buy 3.5 million tons a week in order to stem their domestic programs. So if they buy this wheat that was offered over the weekend at $393 to $400 a ton, that's over $10 a bushel delivered, the market will react to it on Monday as another indication that the world needs this wheat. I think that they'll buy a portion of it. I think they'll buy about 150,000 tons.
So better than $8 wheat, then.
Oh, well, it's they won't trade wheat with the United States because we've got weed seeds in our wheat. But I think that the world wheat situation is so tight that you cannot afford to to lose any of the Australian or any of the Argentine wheat. Now, in my S&Ds, I've got Australia plugged in at 21 million tons. The USDA still has them at 23. I've got people in Australia that are telling me today their crop is 18 million tons. But it's April there. The wheat's just now coming out of dormancy. So they can get a rain at any time and fix that situation. But it's tenuous.
And then, Corn, I want to take up the ethanol issue just a bit, because I...
Can we stay with the European and the South American corn for just a minute?
Because yeah, go for it.
There's something very important here that you need to be aware of and keep it in your thoughts. Remember, the EU over the last 10 years has refused to approve GMO corn. We're talking about triple stack.
For planting.
For anything. They will not allow GMO corn imports into that country. So when their feed wheat got bad, what did they do? They go to Brazil and they buy Brazilian corn. They go to Argentina, they buy Argentine corn. They go all around their neck of the woods and they buy all the barley they can buy. They have taken, and they came to the U.S. and they bought sorghum.
Wait. Triple stack, the only one that's not approved is AgriSure.
I'm telling you that the EU does not allow any GMO corn imports. None. Zero.
Well, I'd have to look that up.
No, but you might guess, too, but believe me, they don't. They have bought every feed grain source around the world that's non-GMO, and they've taken the price of Brazilian corn to $200 a ton compared to U.S. corn at about $160 or
$165.
Mm-hmm. So what's happened is that the people that would normally buy Brazilian corn or Argentine corn are going to come buy U.S. corn because the EU has bought it and driven the price up. So that's one of the reasons why, even though we're not doing business into the EU, that's one of the reasons why our export business is going to be quite a bit bigger.
I'll stay with Europe for just a second and talk about wheat. When Mike brought up the 10% set aside, and I'd have to go back and think about this just a bit. But their set-aside works differently than ours. And their when they say set-aside for wheat, set-aside, they mean actually set-aside for wheat acres, especially in France, right?
No, so it's not
where they're not putting something in the ground. They're setting it aside and putting wheat into the ground.
No, it is just like our set-aside where they cannot grow anything on it.
Okay.
It's a rotation, but they are required to set aside 10% of their agricultural product producing land. And they did away with that, I want to say it was in July.
Of this year?
Right.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's why. I was in France in May. And I know I was on wheat ground because it was part of the European's cap, Union cap.
Yeah.
And then now let's take up ethanol just a bit and more about these ethanol plants. Like the rest of these guys, we all talk to somebody in the ethanol industry, and they're all, I guess everybody's starting to hear the same thing, that this is going to be not all that pretty in the next 6 months or a year for the ethanol producer. And I suppose that might mean it's not going to be very pretty for many of these corn farmers either who have these corn contracts with them if they're a farmer-owned plant. Because the corn contract's going to require them to deliver corn one way or the other, and they may have to deliver it at a price much lower than they could receive in the marketplace.
I guess that let's talk about timeline, because up till today, I have several friends that are hedging for ethanol plants that they have all of this year pretty well hedged at profitable levels. It's certainly not the dollar and a half obscene profits they had last year, but they are profitable, probably making
through the end of the calendar year.
Yeah, making 20 to 25 cents a bushel is what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never had a chance to hedge anything forward of December at profits. And one of the things that's happened to them is that they've lost the ability to go price ethanol forward. Early this summer, I could go sell ethanol 12 months out. I might not like the price, but I could sell it 12 months out. Today, there's not a bid other than a spot bid for ethanol. The hedging mechanism at the Board of Trade, the ethanol contract, has been fairly active for the last 4 or 5 days, and the option swap contract has been very active. So I know that there's been some people that have been buying ethanol and selling corn because they thought that the margins were so bad that we would have to shut some plants down and it would drive the price of ethanol back up. But my people that are in the business tell me that these plants have been built and they're going to run them no matter what the profitability. And that may happen for 8 months, 9 months, or a year before they run out of excess money.
Well, excess money or corn, either one. Do you know how the corn contract works? I mean, how some of the – and I think a lot of the plants are done this way.
So, you have to tell me what you're talking about, the ethanol contract?
Yeah, so the way it works is for a farmer-owned plant, the way it works is – and I don't know how many plants are this way, but I looked at least at one that was in the planning stage, and this is the way the corn contract works. So the farmer would sign up, and he generally speaking, he'd buy in, and he'd agree to deliver 10 or 20,000 bushels, right? And then the corn contract would say something like, if we're operating in the red, we can call on you to deliver not only that corn, but up to twice as much as that, and at a lower price at this time, and then we will make up that difference to you, whatever the difference, and that we'll make the difference up to you at a later date once we start running in the black again. So that the plants, and I think that may be the reason you're hearing that the ethanol plants will continue to grind along. Under the contracts they've signed on the former own, that they're going to be able to get corn at a cheaper price. They just have to pay it back at a later date.
Don't hold me to these numbers, but
yeah.
If you go back 2 years ago, 60% of the ethanol capacity running was farmer-owned. I'm going to tell you that number today is down to about 15%.
Is that all?
Yeah. It's really dropped.
Well, the outside investment is huge.
We got the outside investors involved in ethanol last summer when it was so big. And I'm going to tell you that a lot of the plants are on their own for buying corn. That's been a major change in about the last 9 to 12 months.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out, I suppose.
Well, I think what happens is they run until they can't run anymore, and then we're going to see some of these ethanol plants that trade at 50 cents on the dollar or 40 cents on the dollar, and we'll consolidate it into stronger hands. But I think before that happens, we're going to see a glut of ethanol. One of the things that happened, remember back, may have been just before we had our last conversation, there were people that were paying $12 and $15 million just to get in line for building an ethanol plant because the margins were so big. Cargill, Fagen, and Biofuels went out on a joint venture and built 4 ethanol plants. Before they were finished, they sold them to Verisign. Now, I'm not privy to all the numbers and everything, but let's say that it cost them $1.50 a gallon to build these plants. I think they sold it to Verisign for $2.10 a gallon. So all these guys that were in the frenzy of building these ethanol plants saw this glut coming, and they were building plants without ever expecting to run them. And they sold them before they ever came online. Verisign bought 330 million gallons of production capacity at the absolute high of the market. And I think you're going to see more and more of that surface. At least these plants are built next to a corn supply, and they're not out of position. I think there are some plants that are just literally out of position. There's one county in Iowa that has three ethanol plants in it. We're not going to have enough acres next year. We're just not going to have. We're getting everything too tight. And I'm very concerned. You asked me about corn. We didn't get to beans.
Mm-hmm.
The bean acreage that we lost last year, we can't afford not to grow a good bean crop. And I'm as much of a farm kid as others that you talk to, and rain makes grain. I must say that every summer, 20 times. But I'm going to tell you, I'm up here in northern Illinois, and in my house, I had 18 inches of rain in 22 days. And I can drive around the back roads up here, and you can smell the rotting soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
I think the northern acres in Minnesota, the corner of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa, that you've lost 500,000 acres of beans. When the bean plant stood under 3 or 4 inches of water, it didn't cover the plant. The plant's 30 inches tall. But it literally suffocated the plant overnight. And the plant turned yellow, laid down, and you drive by it now, and the it's black. I mean, it's just rotted in 10 days. And I think that you go into southern Illinois, Greene County, and the areas go another 100 miles south of you, and there are people that are baling beans, double crop beans, because they're just not going to make any beans. My guys that planted beans the last couple of days of June and the first couple of days of July, the bean plants got up to maybe 6 or 8 inches tall, was not able to get the roots down to subsoil moisture. They had their last rain the first week of June, and the bean plants just died. That's where we're going to get some of our wheat acres. Some of these double crop bean acres are going to get zeroed out in the southern belt, and we'll see early wheat planting go in there. Wheat seed's going to be at a premium. It's pretty hard to come by.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
The only thing I can tell you is that this has been the toughest week for me that I've had in years. Markets have been so intense. Personal fast market all day long for the last 2 days.
Wow.
Longs in wheat liquidating. New crop wheat being hedged. I just can't. You can't believe how much July 08 and July 09 wheat that I'm short on my books. The guys just won't quit selling it. They're going to plant it, so they're going to sell it. I held everybody off until we got to 610 in Chicago, but I haven't been able to hold the guys off in Kansas City. The hard wheat hedges that have come across my books are just phenomenal.
Oops, I was going to let you go, but I'm not. You brought Kansas City up, so I want to go back to this issue with the ag econ, or with the disconnect between the cash market and the futures market.
And my comment about it's going to happen in beans and corn.
Yeah, well, and wait for corn, but I want to talk about wheat and soybeans to begin with. I mean, those obviously are representing, I guess, what we would call a world price, as opposed to the Illinois price for soft red and maybe the Midwest price for soybeans. How do they fix it?
Soft red wheat is a very limited audience for the world.
I know.
The world wants to buy milling quality hard wheat.
Correct.
And you only have one major buyer of soft wheat, and that's actually two. You've got Egypt and Mexico. Those are the only two major buyers. You'll do a little bit of business feed in, you know, to North Africa and others, but it's really those are your only two major buyers. And if you grow more soft red than what they will buy, you just got a problem.
Hmm. Well, I guess the question is the Board of Trade, they worked on the soft red They worked on the soft red contract to begin with a couple of years ago to try to get it to better track. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem like it's done.
Well, the changes
job.
That they put in place don't take effect until July 08.
Will they fix it?
Well, they lowered the VAMO to 4 parts. Still too high. It's not merchantable. If you have a vomitoxin year, the delivery week, it's poisoned with vomitoxin.
I didn't realize it was July 08 before they went into effect.
Right. It's not in effect yet. They also raised the storage rate. And the thinking behind that, according to Dave Lehman at the Board of Trade, is that they would make the spreads get wide enough that the index funds wouldn't be able to buy the deferreds. It would make it too expensive, and it would chase them away from doing that. I think it's just a situation where the commercial storage space just went up in value.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fix the contract. I think that the problem with the contract with soft red wheat is that it has a very limited audience, but it is the market that has the liquidity, and you can thank the Board of Trade for that, so that when the speculative interest wants to come after wheat, they just want to buy wheat, and it doesn't matter that it's not hard wheat, and the rest of the world won't want it. They just want to buy wheat.
Yeah, wouldn't it be better to put it just as a cash settlement then?
Well, it may very well end up being that. I think that if you talk to the Board of Trade, they'll tell you they're looking at that. But if they do it, it'll be a new contract, not the old one.
Would they do the same thing for soybeans and potential, I don't know about corn, for soybeans
well,
to make a new contract up for soybeans?
I don't think there's any movement at all to take the corn or beans to cash settlement, and I would tell you the movement in wheat is it's really small.
We don't call it. I don't even follow the South American soybean contract. How is it done? Is it even
it's
still
dead.
Traded?
It's dead.
Is it dead?
It's absolutely dead. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that it's important to recognize that part of what you're talking about is logistics and freight. It didn't come up in your conversation with the other guys, but you know we've gone through some gyrations in freight here that are just phenomenal. When the harvest started in southern belt, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas are going to have great crops, the freight rates skyrocketed. We took barge freight to 1,500% of tariff on the southern river. You were taking barges from the Illinois River and moving them south to service the Ohio River and Memphis and south, because the barge freight rates got monstrously high. We did the same thing with rail rates. You took rail rates. The rail rates are tariffed, so you've got a tariff. That's what you pay to move corn or wheat from Kansas City to the Gulf or from Minnesota to the PNW. But the car availability is freely traded. And we were paying 55 cents a bushel just to rent a car for a month to move wheat this year. So what happens is that the value of a commodity at the destination is historically high, and the value of the commodity at the interior on the origination points is historically cheap. And you'll be talking about this year, the difference between corn at the Gulf and corn at the center of Illinois will be $1.50 to $2 different.
There'll be a lot of screaming.
Well, take it to the Gulf.
Hmm.
Deliver it to the Gulf. I have a group of elevators that I deal with in Nebraska that when the western Nebraska corn crop was used up, which is pretty fast because they feed it and they export it, they go buy, and then now they have ethanol plants, they go buy corn out of eastern Nebraska and move it to the west. Well, they can't do that anymore because the trucking costs are double and triple what they used to be. You can blame it on increased gasoline cost or diesel cost, but it really is that the demand for trucking is up that much. Look at all of these containers that we're moving around. It's a huge deal. And I think that the landscape in our business is changing so rapidly that you can't ignore one segment. I mean, the merchandising people that I deal with, hedging is a simple part of it. Their big problem is the freight cost and the logistics. they'll just eat them alive. It'll bankrupt companies if you don't have somebody that knows what they're doing.
Energy, energy, energy. I guess that's always kind of the bottom line at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And our ability to react quickly to changes in the economy and in our environment. You would think when you take ocean freight to $95 a ton from the Gulf to Asia, that somebody would go out and build a bunch of new boats. But it takes 2 or 3 years to build a new boat. So it takes a while to react to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that our business, our economy, is stronger than anybody wants to talk about. And we can screw it up with subprime loans and things like that, but our economy is really, really screaming. We're building stuff. We're shipping stuff. And
consumers are buying stuff.
Yeah. People are making money, and tax revenues are great. And the ag sector, if you go back just 5 or 6 years ago, and you drove through some of these small country towns, they were dying. They're vibrant now. You got new businesses going in. People are spending money. People are going out and buying pickups and buying cars, and the kids at the schools are healthier. Our ag economy has turned the corner, and I'm kind of glad to be part of it. It's amazing to me.
Well, on that note, maybe we better let you go.
It's been fun.
All right.
You have a good weekend. I'm glad the weekend's here.
Oh, me too. Me too. I was at Farm Progress Show all week, so I'm ready to be done and have 3 days off.
Yeah, well, have a glass of wine on me tonight.
I will. Thank you. I'll send the bill to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.